हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
So Rajanath, then he asked, what books of the Vedas have the Acharyas of the bona fide Vaisivic successions accepted? Babaji, the Acharyas have accepted the 12 Upanishads named Isha, Kena, Kata, Prashna, Mukunda, Mundaka, Mandukya, Taittiriya, Aitreya, Chandogya, Brihadaranyaka, and Svetasvatara, as well as the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, the Nrisinga Tapani Upanishad, and other like Tapani Upanishads, as well as the Brahmanas, Mandalas, and other portions of the Rig Yajur, Sama, and Atharva Vedas. The Acharyas have accepted all these books as sources of genuine knowledge. Rajana, the Brahmanas are the section of the Vedas that deals with the ritual, like how the mantra will be used in rituals. Mandalas, I'm not sure. I never knew that it was a separate one. I think probably mandalas is another word for samhitas. Because mandalas, I think, is where all the verses are kept. And they're in different groups like that. So the mandalas would be and other portions of the Rig Yajur Sama. So, Upanishads has been mentioned, Brahmanas have been mentioned, Mandalas has been mentioned, so that must be the Aranyakas, you know, they explain the meanings, the esoteric meanings behind the rituals given in the Brahmanas. Rajanath, you said that material logic has no power to understand spiritual things. What is the proof of that? Babaji, in the Katha Upanishad 1.2.9, it is said, the spiritual truth cannot be understood by material logic. In the Vedanta Sutra 2.1.11, it is said, transcendental topics cannot be understood by argument or logic. In these and other statements of the Veda and Vedanta, it is seen that material logic cannot be counted as a source of true spiritual knowledge. In the Mahabharata, Bhishma Parva 5.22, it is said, anything transcendental to material nature is called inconceivable, whereas arguments are all mundane. Since mundane arguments cannot touch transcendental subject matters, one should not try to understand transcendental subject matters through mundane arguments. In these words of the Mahabharata, the limits of material knowledge, material logic are seen. The conclusion of devotional service is also explained in these words written by Srila Rupa Goswami, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.32. For persons who have a natural taste for understanding books like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, devotional service is easier than for those simply accustomed to mental speculation and argumentative processes. Material logic cannot bring a definitive, conclusive understanding. This is described in the following words, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.33. A person may become governed by certain convictions derived by his own arguments and decisions. Then another person, who may be a greater logician, will nullify these conclusions and establish another thesis. In this way, the path of argument will never be safe or conclusive. It's interesting, he uses that safe or conclusive. It's only conclusive, we just think of it in terms of the philosophy or some point, but the conclusion is what you're trying to gain. Trying to gain the conclusion. So then it becomes very interesting. It says safe or conclusive. It means it won't stay. And you don't gain something. Because that's what, in the material world, this is what we look for. Is what some gain we have, and then to protect what gain we get. So then material logic can't give either of those, because once you establish it, someone else may defeat it. So then it's lost. So you haven't really gained anything, and what was there was lost. So then it falls into the same category as money and other things. If this is so, then what is the use of material logic and argument? Vrajanath. Well, Saintly Babaji, I accept that the self-perfect Vedas are the best of all sources of knowledge. If they try to contradict the Vedas, the logicians are merely speaking in vain. Now please recite the second verse of the Dasamul. Okay, now here you made a point. If they try to contradict the Vedas, logicians are merely speaking in vain. Therefore, the point comes up there is logic used to understand it means the Veda has made a point and you use that logic to establish that point, that is okay. But if you use it separately, to try to separately gain knowledge, then it's useless. That's the point. So that's what we're trying to, that's what the Babaji is trying to say. If it doesn't contradict, means it's in pursuance of, then it's good, it's valuable. If it's not in pursuance of, then it's useless. Babaji, Lord Hari is the only supreme truth. Brahma, Shiva, and Indra bow down before him. The impersonal Brahman, which is completely untouched by matter, is the effulgence of his transcendental form. The all-pervading Supersoul is his expansion. He is the father of the material universes. He is the lover of Sri Radha. He is the form. His form is splendid like a dark monsoon cloud. He is completely spiritual. So this establishes him as the supreme in everything. Establishes him, he is supreme and he has a form. That's very important. Because unless one accepts that his form is eternal, then there's no real gain from the study. Vrajanath. The Upanishads teach that the impersonal Brahman is the highest truth, and it is beyond the touch of matter. Why then does Sriman Gaur Hari affirm that it is the effulgence of Lord Hari's body? Please explain that to me. Babaji. Lord Hari is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. The word Bhagavan means he who possesses six opulences. In the Vishnu Purana 6.5.47, it is written, full wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. These are the six opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These six opulences are interrelated like the limbs of a body. Which of them is the body? Which of them are the limbs? The body is the resting place of the limbs. The tree is the body, and the branches are the limbs. The whole form is the body, and the hands and feet are included among the limbs. The body is the resting place of the limbs. of the Supreme Lord's opulences. His handsomeness is the body. And the other opulences are the limbs. Wealth, strength, and fame are three limbs. The effulgence of fame consists of knowledge and renunciation. Therefore, these two are the effulgence of one of the limbs. They are the opulences of an opulence. They are not direct opulences themselves. Knowledge of changeless spirit and renunciation of matter are parts of the body of the impersonal Brahman. The impersonal Brahman is the effulgence emanating from the spiritual worlds. The unchanging, inactive, formless, qualityless Brahman is not the independent highest truth. It is the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the independent highest truth. The light of a fire is not independent. It is the fire itself that is independent. And the light is merely one of the fire's qualities. So he is explaining the six opulences that Krishna has. And which is, something has to be, it's not just, you have just six qualities, but they have to be, they're held together. Because they're personal. Yeah, you have to put those relaxed things. So the body then is his beauty. It's his handsomeness. So that's the form, because then everything else is coming out of that. Like you have the trunk of the tree, and then you have the branches, and then you have the roots. So the main point that everything else rests on is his beauty. So that's the most, that's the special thing. Then the other opulences, then wealth, strength, and fame are the three limbs, like that. It's interesting. Wealth, strength, fame. And then the effulgence of fame are knowledge and renunciation. So these are effulgences of the limbs, so they're not direct. They are the opulences of an opulence. They're not, yeah, that's interesting, not direct themselves. So knowledge of spirit and renunciation of matter are connected with the aspect of his impersonal Brahman. So the Lord has his form, and then there's the effulgence of the Brahman. So that then is manifest as knowledge and renunciation. Therefore, it's very natural that knowledge and renunciation are the activities of position of those who are interested in Brahman. So that's why that matches. Well, like the modern impersonalism, where they're impersonal but interested in wealth, strength, and fame, then it's not proper, you know? So claiming one but dealing with the other. Vajranath. In many places in the Vedas, after the impersonal Brahman was described, the text declared Om Shanti Shanti Hari Om. In the way the Vedas affirm the superiority of Lord Hari. Who is Lord Hari? Babaji, Lord Hari is Radha and Krishna, who enjoy transcendental pastimes. Rajanath, I will ask about this later. Now please tell me, what kind of expansion of the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan, is the Supersoul, Paramatma, the Father of the material universe? It's interesting, he says, Lord Hari is Radha and Krishna. Babaji, employing the two opulences of wealth and strength, the Supreme Lord created the material world of Maya. After creating the world, the Lord Himself expanded Himself as Vishnu and entered it. When the Lord expands Himself, each expansion is perfect and complete. This is described in the following words of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 5.1. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is perfect and complete. And because He is completely perfect, all emanations from Him, such as the phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. Because He is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from Him, He remains the complete balance. Therefore, the super soul Paramatma is Lord Vishnu, who is perfect and complete, who has entered the material worlds and protects the material world. Lord Vishnu thus manifests in three forms as Karanadakshaya Vishnu, Kiradakshaya Vishnu, and Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. The Karana Ocean, which is also known as the Viraja River, lies on the boundary that separates the spiritual and material worlds. To that place, Lord Mahavishnu goes and reclines on the Karana Ocean. Thus he is Karana Dakshaya Vishnu. Glancing at her from far away, the Lord employs Mahadevi to create the material world. The Lord Himself describes this in these words of the Bhagavad Gita 9.10. Material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, and it is producing all moving and non-moving beings. In the Vedas it is said, Aitreya Upanishad 1.1, the Supreme Personality of Godhead glanced over the material creation. It is also said, Aitreya Upanishad 1.1, the Supreme Personality of Godhead created this entire world. The Supreme Lord also, whose glance is so powerful, expands Himself as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and enters the material world. The particles of light that constitute Lord Mahavishnu's glance are the conditioned spirit souls. Into the heart of each conditioned soul, the Lord enters in a form the size of a thumb. That form is called Kiradakshaya Vishnu or Hiranyagarbha. Thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual soul both reside in the heart. This is described in the following words of Svaita Sutara Upanishad 4.6. The individual spirit soul and the super soul, Supreme Personality of Godhead, are like two friendly birds sitting on the same tree. In this way, the Shruti Shastra explains that the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual spirit souls are like two birds. The bird that is the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives the fruits of karma. And the bird that is the individual spirit soul tries to enjoy the material world. In the Bhagavad Gita 10.41.42, the Supreme Lord declares, "Know that all beautiful, glorious, and mighty creations spring but from a spark of my splendor. But what is the need? But what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire creation. Therefore, the super soul Paramatma, who creates, enters, protects, and controls the material world, is an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. Rajanath, I accept that the impersonal Brahman is the effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's body, and that the super soul is his expansion. Now please tell me, what is the proof that Lord Krishna is the original form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead?" Babaji, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has all opulence and sweetness eternally. when his opulence is manifested, he is Lord Narayana, the master of the spiritual world and the origin of Lord Mahavishnu. Thus, when his pastimes of opulence are manifest, he is Lord Narayana. And when his pastimes of sweetness are manifest, he is Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna possesses the highest limit of sweetness. The effulgence of his sweetness is so great that it eclipses all opulence that exists anywhere. Therefore, the conclusion is that Lord Narayan and Lord Krishna are not different. However, in the spiritual world, the greatest sweetness of transcendental mellows is present in Lord Krishna. He is the highest resting place of all transcendental mellows. This is explained in the following words of the Rig Veda, 122, 164, 31. I have seen a certain gopa dressed in colorful garments and accompanied by many beautiful girls as he wanders the pathways in the spiritual world. That same gopa again and again enters the material worlds and stays in the hearts of living beings. In the Chandogya Upanishad 8.13.1, it is said, to attain Sri Radha, I surrender to Lord Krishna. To attain Lord Krishna, I surrender to Sri Radha. These verses describe the liberated souls and their relationship with Lord Krishna. The Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.28, it is said, all of the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord. The Lord Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita 7.7, Lord Krishna himself declares, O conqueror of wealth, Arjuna, there is no truth superior to me. In the Gopaltapani Upanishad 1.20, it is said, Lord Krishna is the worshipable, all-pervading supreme controller. And although he is one, he manifests in many forms. Rajana. Lord Krishna has an average-sized form. How can he be present everywhere? If we accept that Lord Krishna has a form, we must also accept that his form can only stay in one place at a time. Now he must fall under the control of material modes. No longer can he be supremely independent. How can all these defects be removed from Lord Krishna? Babaji, Baba, you have a conditioned soul. You are a conditioned soul trapped in the material world of Maya. That is why you have all these doubts. As long as it is bound by the ropes of Maya, your intelligence will never be able to touch the transcendental reality. When it tries to understand the pure spiritual reality, it will assume that spirit has qualities and form like those of matter. When it does this, the intelligence becomes worried that it has followed the wrong path. Then the intelligence begins to imagine that the Supreme Spirit has no form and no qualities. In this way, the intelligence becomes cheated and cannot understand the truth about the Supreme Spirit. In truth, the defects you think might affect the ordinary sized form of Krishna, Lord Krishna, do not have any bearing on his true spiritual form. The idea that the Supreme Spirit is formless, unchanging, and inactive, idea is obtained by looking for the exact opposites of what appears in the material world. These are also qualities of a certain kind. Qualities of another kind are Lord Krishna's handsome form, his face blossoming with happiness, his lotus eyes, his lotus feet which give peacefulness to the devotees, and his all graceful limbs perfect for enjoying transcendental pastimes. This pure spiritual form of Lord Krishna is one feature of the Lord. When these two features, the personal and impersonal, are considered, it is seen that the average-sized form of Lord Krishna is the most handsome and pleasing. This is described in the following words of Sri Narada Pancharatra. Lord Krishna is supremely independent. His form and qualities are free of any possible flaw. His body is not like the bodies made of matter. His hands, feet, face, belly, and all other parts of his body are all made of transcendental bliss and nothing else. Lord Krishna is not different from his body. He does not reside in the material body from himself, as the conditioned souls in the material world do. He and his body are one. Lord Krishna's form is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. His qualities are not material. Nothing about him is material, in even the slightest degree. He is not limited by material time and space. His form is fully present in every place for all time. He is one. His form has all knowledge. The material world is so large it cannot be measured by the conditioned souls. It is natural that a form of average size could never be present everywhere in the material world. However, in the spiritual world, all qualities have limitless power. Therefore, the average-sized form of Lord Krishna can be present everywhere. This is actually one of his natural qualities. In the material world, an average-sized form cannot be all-pervading. However, the supremely handsome spiritual form of Lord Krishna is certainly all-pervading. The extraordinary qualities of that form are very different from the qualities of material forms. That spiritual form is very glorious. Can anyone be more glorious than the all-pervading Supreme Spirit? In this material world, everything is limited by time and space. What is the glory of a form that is free from the limits of time and present everywhere? Lord Krishna's transcendental abode of Raja is described in the Chandogya Upanishad, which calls it Brahmapura. That abode is perfectly spiritual. It has all spiritual wonders. Its activities are all spiritual. Its places are spiritual. Its land and water are spiritual. Its rivers and trees are spiritual. Its sun is spiritual. Its sky is spiritual. Its sun, moon, and stars are all spiritual. They have not the slightest drop of any material flaw. Rather, they are filled with spiritual bliss. O Baba, the Navadvip Mayapur, where you are sitting now, is that same spiritual world. However, because you are trapped in Maya's net, you cannot reach out and touch it. When you attain the mercy of great saintly persons, when you return the mercy of a great saintly person, you will see that everything in this place is spiritual. Then we will be living in the spiritual world of Braja. When did you get the idea that the average-sized form of Lord Krishna could have any flaws? The glory of Lord Krishna's average-sized form is far from what your material intelligence can understand. This has happened because in the past you committed many impious deeds. So he's pointing out that Krishna is one. There's only one Krishna. And then from this one Krishna, he has many forms. He manifests in different ways, depending upon which emphasis of qualities he manifests. So as Krishna, he manifests most prominently the quality of sweetness. And as Narayana, then he's manifesting his quality, of opulence, like that, of being the Lord and everything. Of being the Lord. So though Narayan expands as Mahavishnu, he creates the material world, he enters the world. And Krishna, he is engaged in all his sweet pastimes with all his wonderful, beauty. Then it's the same person. They're just manifesting different flavor, different moods. It's not a different person, it's the same person. So the idea here was being presented that Krishna, because he has an average size, therefore how could he be everywhere? Because he's just that big, so how can he be everywhere? Because an average size won't go everywhere. You have to have something very big to go everywhere. Not only that, if he's an average size, how will it fit into an atom? He's too big for an atom. He's too small for the universe. So therefore, how could he be? But he's pointing out, because it's spiritual, then we can't understand this by our material intelligence. So the Lord is able, by his expansions, then he is everywhere.
Vrajanath.
O saintly Babaji, Shri Radha Krishna's forms, beauty, features, pastimes, companions, homes, forests, and all else of them are purely spiritual. A wise man will not doubt that. However, in what times and places do they manifest their forms, abodes, and pastimes? Babaji, Shri Krishna is the master of all potencies. He can make any possible thing possible. There is nothing surprising in this. He is playful and enjoys transcendental pastimes. Whatever he wishes is at once accomplished. He has all powers. If he wishes, he can bring his transcendental form and abode to the material world. There is no doubt of that. Vrajanath, the doubt is this. By his own will, Lord Krishna appears in the material world. However, the people who see him tend to think that his transcendental abode is a material place, like all other material places. His transcendental form is a material form, like the forms of ordinary human beings. And his transcendental pastimes in Braja are ordinary material activities. Why do they see like that? If it is true that Lord Krishna has mercifully appeared within the material world, why do not all people see that his form is spiritual? Babaji, one of Lord Krishna's limitless transcendental qualities is his mercy to his devotees. Employing his Ladini Shakti, he gives his devotees the power to see that everything about him is spiritual. To his devotees, he reveals everything about his transcendental pastimes. However, the non-devotees' eyes, ears, and other senses, which are contaminated by many offenses, cannot see any difference between the pastimes of the Lord and ordinary historical narratives of human activities. Vrajanath, did not Sri Krishna descend to this world to show mercy to the people in general? Babaji, his descent to this world brings all auspiciousness. When he descends to this world and manifests his transcendental pastimes, the devotees can see that his form and pastimes are purely spiritual. The non-devotees surely see them as material. Still, merely by seeing them, the non-devotees gain great spiritual merit. When his spiritual merit accumulates and becomes very great, they become able to have faith in pure devotional service. Therefore, the Lord's descent to the material world brings a great benefit to the conditioned souls. So even though the non-devotees may not be able to appreciate the Lord and his pastimes, just by seeing those pastimes or anything in connection with the Lord, they benefit. So that's an important point. So when that benefit accumulates, and it's a lot, then they're able to take up the serious association with devotees and pure devotional service. Vrajanath. Wait, don't close it. Just how long will it take for it to get here? Just saying, if you leave it a couple of minutes, it cools the room down. And then close it. Vrajanath, why are Lord Krishna's pastimes not clearly described in every page of the Vedas? Babaji, on every page, the Vedas again and again sing the glories of Lord Krishna's pastimes. In some places they are described directly, and in other places they are only hinted at. When the words of the text directly refer to Lord Krishna, the description is direct. An example of that is the following words of the Chandogya Upanishad. To attain Sri Radha, I take shelter of Lord Krishna. To attain Lord Krishna, I take shelter of Sri Radha. In these words, and the words that follow it in the Chandogya Upanishad, liberated souls and their service to Lord Krishna in the different rasas is clearly described. When the words only hint at the descriptions of Lord Krishna, the description is indirect. In the conversations of Yajnavalkya, Gargi, and Maitreya in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the description of Lord Krishna is at first indirect, then at the end, direct. In some places, the Vedas have described Lord Krishna's eternal pastimes directly. In other places, chanting the glories of the impersonal Brahman and the Supersoul. The Vedas have described Lord Krishna only indirectly. In truth, the Vedas have taken a vow to chant the glories of Lord Krishna. Vrajana, O saintly Babaji, Lord Krishna is the supreme truth. Of this, there is no doubt. However, what is the status of Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Surya, Ganesh, and the other demigods worshipped in this world? Please tell me. Many Brahmins say that Shiva is the supreme truth, and no one is higher than him. I was born in the family of such a Brahmin, and I have heard and repeated this idea since childhood. What is the truth of this? Please tell me. Babaji, now I will describe to you the relative merits of the ordinary living entities, the demigods, the demigoddesses worshipped in this world, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please listen. I will now repeat to you a list of some of Lord Krishna's transcendental qualities. They are described in the words of a great philosopher, Srila Rupa Goswami, Sri Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Krishna, the supreme hero, has the most beautiful transcendental body. His body possesses all good features. It is radiant and very pleasing to the eyes. His body is powerful, strong, and youthful. Krishna is the linguist of all wonderful languages. He is a truthful and very pleasing speaker. He is expert in speaking, and he is very wise, learned. He is a very wise, learned scholar and a genius. Krishna is expert in artistic enjoyment. He is highly cunning, expert, grateful, and firmly determined in his vows. He knows how to deal according to time, person, and country. And he sees through the scriptures and authoritative books. He is very clean and self-controlled. Lord Krishna is steady, his senses are controlled, and he is forgiving, grave, and calm. He is also equal to all. Moreover, he is magnanimous, religious, chivalrous, and kind. He is always respectful to respectable people. That is probably good to close. Krishna is very simple and liberal. He is humble and bashful, and he is the protector of the surrendered souls. He is very happy, and he is always the well-wisher of his devotees. He is auspicious, and he is submissive to love. Krishna is very influential and famous. He is the object of attachment for everyone. He is the shelter of the good and the virtuous. He is attractive to the minds of women, and he is worshipped by everyone. He is very, very rich. Krishna is the supreme, and he is always glorified as the supreme Lord and controller. Thus, all the previously mentioned transcendental qualities are in him. The 50 qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The 50 qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead above mentioned are as deep as the ocean. In other words, they are difficult to comprehend. These qualities are sometimes very minutely exhibited in living beings, but they are fully manifest in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Apart from these 50 qualities, there are 5 other qualities found in the Supreme Personality of Godhead that are partially present in demigods like Shiva. These qualities are: 1, the Lord is always situated in his original position. 2, he is omniscient. 3, he is always fresh and youthful. 4, he is the concentrated form of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. 5, he is the possessor of all mystic perfection. These are another 5 qualities which exist. There are another 5 qualities which exist in the Vaikuntha planets, in Narayana, and the Lord of Lakshmi. These qualities are present in Krishna, but are not present in demigods like Lord Shiva or other living entities. These are: inconceivable supreme power; 2, generating innumerable universes from his body; 3, being the original source of all incarnations; 4, bestowing salvation upon enemies killed; and 5, the ability to attract exalted persons who are satisfied in themselves. Although these qualities are present in Narayana, the dominating deity of the Vaikuntha planets, they are even more wonderfully present in Krishna. Apart from these 60 transcendental qualities, Krishna has an additional 4 qualities which are not manifested even in the personality of Narayana. These are: 1. Krishna is like an ocean filled with eaves of pastimes that evoke wonder within everyone in the three worlds. 2. In his activities of conjugal love, he is always surrounded by dear devotees who possess unequaled love for him. 3. He attracts the minds of all the three worlds by his melodious vibration of his flute. 4. His personal beauty and opulence are beyond compare. No one is equal to him, and no one is greater than him. Thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead astonishes all living entities, both moving and non-moving, within the three worlds. He is so beautiful that he is called Krishna. Above Narayana, Krishna has 4 specific transcendental qualities. His wonderful pastimes and abundance of wonderful associates who are very dear to him, like the gopis, his wonderful beauty and his wonderful vibration and his fruit. Lord Krishna is more exalted than ordinary living beings and the demigods like Lord Shiva. He is even more exalted than his own personal expansion, Narayana. These 64 opulences are fully, eternally, and splendidly manifest in Lord Krishna, whose pure spiritual form is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. The last 4 opulences are present only in the form of Lord Krishna. They are not present in even the Lord's pastime incarnations. Now that these 4 qualities are excluded, the remaining 60 qualities are fully and splendidly manifest in Lord Narayana, who is the master of the spiritual sky, and whose form is perfectly spiritual. When the next 5 opulences are excluded, the remaining 55 opulences are present in Lord Shiva and other exalted demigods. Drops of the remaining 50 opulences may be seen in the individual spirit souls. Shiva, Brahma, Surya, Ganesh, and Indra are partial expansions of the Lord, given jurisdiction to rule over certain affairs of the Lord's opulences. Still, they are individual souls, servants of the Supreme Lord. By their mercy, many people attained pure devotional service. They are rulers over the conditioned souls, and that is why they are objects of worship in the material world. The worship of them gradually leads to worship of the Supreme Lord. If they give to certain souls the gift of pure devotional service to Lord Krishna, those souls consider them spiritual masters and worship them eternally. Lord Shiva, who is filled with devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is considered non-different from the Supreme Lord himself. That is why people addicted to the ideas of impersonalism take shelter of him and consider him the highest form of the Supreme. Questions on
those? Those are addicted to impersonalism.
Yeah. As he's pointing out, is that the devotees, the great demigods, they also may give, their potencies are expansions of the Lord. And so they may also give devotional service. And then they're considered spiritual masters. So if they do that, then he's like Lord Shiva, because he's a great devotee of the Lord. Then he's considered non-different from the Lord, and the devotees are non-different. So because of this, then the idea comes that they're non-different, that he's the Supreme, but that is there in the minds of those who are addicted to the impersonal Brahman. Does that make sense? Means they worship Lord Shiva, because he's the ego. So you remove the ego, then you're left without false ego. But the problem is if you only worship Shiva, you can remove the false ego, but you don't gain real ego, right? Unless you understand him as a devotee.
then you can get devotional service from him. Then you understand that the real identity is as servant of the Lord. Does that make some sense?
Regarding the question of Krishna's form being unified, so the answer was that Krishna is everywhere through his different energies, or
this. He's expansions. No, it's expansions. It means for God. God is spiritual, so anything spiritual is inconceivable. So we can't understand that through our material intelligence. Therefore, we are not able to understand or appreciate God's... we think that the size, because something, how big it is, that's how much it can have influence. You have a big mountain, so then, you know, you can spread it out over quite a big area. But if something's not so big, then you can't do so much with it. Does that make sense?
So how is Krishna that God is unlimited in
what
sense?
Unlimited?
Because
he's God. Anything spiritual is inconceivable. Right? So God is unlimited. It's a quality of God. So they say, well, how is water wet? It's just that's the nature of water.
Explain.
No, it's explained. It's just that you came later. You have to go back then. Saying, first of all, these doubts come up because we're conditioned. We're not conditioned. If we were spiritual, we would understand this. Because we're material, we don't understand spiritual. That's the first thing. And by material intelligence, you can't touch spirit anyway. That's confirmed in the scriptures. Okay. So now, when it tries to understand that the form is spiritual because it's using material intelligence, it can't understand it, therefore it has a doubt whether this is the correct path to pursue. And so then from that, then the next natural thing is, this doesn't seem to be having the end of light. The second light's open. So then, then one doubts whether this is the correct path. So then, the next thing is then one therefore decides that it's actually things are impersonal, right? Because see, is material is here, so therefore naturally spiritual is the opposite, right? So that's the approach. So, but it's a faulty approach. Just let us say somebody is a very bad person. He speaks badly, and he looks at people badly. He beats people with his arms, he kicks them with his feet. You know, he does all these kind of bad things. So therefore, using this logic, that means that a good person wouldn't have any arms, because bad people have arms and they beat people. So good people wouldn't have arms. They wouldn't have eyes, so they don't glare at you. They don't have mouths, so they can't speak bad language. Right? They don't have feet, so therefore they can't kick you. Yeah. You understand? So this kind of logic, that's the problem. Is that we're trying to figure out the Supreme Lord through this kind of logic, there'll always be a weakness.
What about the argument that he gave that says Krishna is middle exercise. So we can be in one place, you know, he's here, but not there. I mean, personally, in this form, in this form of this. So, he's, what about that?
Yeah, well, he's already basically answered it here. Is worth thinking because we have seen people here in this world and they can only be one place at a time. Therefore, God, because he's taking the same size and shape, therefore, it's natural that he also can only be at one place at one time. That's the logic. So that does answer all that. Though at the same time, let's see here. It says, in this way, the intelligence becomes cheated and cannot understand the truth about the Supreme Spirit. In truth, the defects you might that you think affect the ordinary sized form of the Lord do not have any bearing on his true spiritual form. The idea that the Supreme Spirit is formless, unchanging, and inactive are ideas obtained by looking for the exact opposites of what appear in this world. These are also qualities of a certain kind. Qualities of another kind are Lord Krishna's handsome form, his face blossoming with happiness, his lotus eyes, his lotus feet. So when you put the two together, then you get the average-sized form of the Lord. So the impersonal means his effulgence, and the personal, which is his form. Okay. So his body is not made of matter. They're transcendental bliss. So he is non-different from his form. So that's different from the soul. So already there's a difference there. He's not limited by material time and space. His form is fully present in every place for all time. He is one. His form has all knowledge. The material world is so large it cannot be measured by the conditioned souls. It is natural that a form of average size could never be present everywhere in the material world. However, in the spiritual world, all qualities have limitless power. Therefore, the average size form of Lord Krishna can be present anywhere. That is exactly one of, or everywhere, that is exactly one of its natural qualities. In the material world, an average size form cannot be all-pervading. However, the supremely handsome spiritual form of Lord Krishna is certainly all-pervading. The extraordinary qualities of that form are very different from the qualities of material forms. That spiritual form is very glorious. Can anyone be glorious, more glorious than the all-pervading Supreme Spirit? In the material world, everything is limited by time and space. What is the glory of a form that is free from the limits of time and space everywhere? Does that make any sense now? Any other questions? Of his qualities. Of that, he hasn't gotten to that yet. He'll probably get to that when he gets, because now he's describing Krishna's greatness like that. Then next he'll get into his energies, and then he'll get into rasa. So probably in rasa he'll explain that. But in this, of the six opulences, if you take, if you're talking about those, then beauty is the most. Also, I think in the 64, there's four special ones, and it's beauty is what's special. Everything else is connected to that. His pastimes are with that. He's surrounded by the devotees. In fact, like that, the flute was playing that in his form. So I think that's the, I think it's that I can understand probably in both lists of the 64 and the six opulences, his beauty is the most special.
Just hearing the devotee's question of the how Krishna being of a normal size can be everywhere. It isn't that Lord Krishna already shows so many ways of expanding himself that and he went all the way to the edge of the universe, of the universal form, encompassing everything inside, and also as expanding each one of the Krishnas everywhere, and also through his energies. Mm-hmm. If he chooses to give service, this is better, to give expansions, to give service. Mm-hmm. It's just be himself, the all encompassing one. Mm-hmm. It's like that. Maybe better to choose expansions and representatives.
No, because it means, oh, why does he do that?
Yeah.
Because the thing is for the Lord, the most important thing is the interaction with the devotees. And all living entities are devotees. Just there are those who recognize it, there are those who don't recognize it. Therefore, even though the living entities in this world aren't conscious of that fact, still it doesn't mean they're not devotees. Therefore, Krishna then goes with them. Because for him, it's not a problem.
Yeah.
Anything he desires, it happens. He just does. He has limitless power, so there's no difficulty to do anything. For him to do that, then it's fun. He goes with the living entity, provides everything for the living entity, establishes all the situations for him. He wants something, he wants to enjoy. So therefore, Krishna created that situation in which the living entity can try to enjoy what he thinks is enjoyable. Like that. So then it functions like that.
It's better with interactions with the beings.
Yeah. So then Krishna is just having fun interacting with the living entities. So the living entities don't know it's him they're interacting with. You know, they think, you know, I'm interacting with the food, but you're only interacting with food because it gives a taste or it gives nourishment to the body. So that taste is Krishna, that nourishment is Krishna. You know, and if whatever we see or appreciate, actually, we think it's one thing, but it's Krishna.
Is Krishna enjoying this relationship that you have with him?
It's his pastime to arrange all this. It's his pastime. But, you know, in other words, whatever he does, he has fun doing it. You know? But, as he says, it's only a very small amount of his potency. So the taste that's there will be, for him, very small. The taste of interacting with the devotees who are conscious of that, that is great. And then within that, then you have gradations between Vaikuntha and Mathura and Vrindavan. So the taste gets deeper as it goes back towards Vrindavan. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like that. So otherwise, there's something's there, but you know, for him, it's nothing. Because he's conscious, and if the living entity is not conscious, how much interaction is there? You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say you have a friend, they've fallen asleep somewhere, and then you put a blanket over them, they're not conscious of it, so for you, you get something out of it. But you can't do that 24 hours a day. And how much did it take? How much did it take of your personality to put that blanket on? It didn't take much.
There is something more than just putting the blanket. This relationship with this person is existing, just that it's not.
So Krishna knows his relationship with us is existing. But just we have not acknowledged the relationship with him.
Why would a living entity want to have a relationship with Krishna as less pleasing to him?
If they are in the
original state, like Vaikuntha, because
no, from Vaikuntha they're not taking that up. It's those who choose not to go to Vaikuntha.
The most pleasing. the Krishna symbol of the Vrindavan, it's the most serious relationship, and this is expanding yourself in pressure with the devotees. So why would the devotees want to have that relationship with Krishna is less pleasing if they already...
No, the living entities are expanding from the Lord, so whatever form of the Lord is there, he has expansion. So those jivas are expanded there.
So everybody's on the
living entity? No. I've never heard that. You say it could be from anywhere. Just like that, I think it passed down from Murari Gupta, who was a Hanuman. So Hanuman is the expansion. Of that matches Ramachandra's pastimes. So he will be there. So that's his place. He won't be somewhere else. Right? Because in that form, how will he take part in the Braja pastimes? Right? We wouldn't want a monkey hopping around inside Nanda Maharaj's house. You know, or you know what I'm saying? So, like that, that's the. Is that as Krishna expands, Lakshmi expands, Radharani expands. So all those qualities that he manifests, those moods he manifests, then Lakshmi has a perfect counterpart. Oh, that's it. Counterpart. I've been looking for that word for the last 2 months. Counterpart. So then, also then, wherever the Lord is in the living and Lakshmi, then there's going to be that aspect. Then there's going to be the reflection of the material world, and then in between the two, there's going to be the jivas. Because the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world, right? Not just the loka, but the whole spiritual sky. So then, that reflection, then you're going to get jivas in between. So those jivas are matching that point.
Do you go from that to the
Let us say you like mangoes, and someone else likes bananas. Are you going to switch? No, because for you it's nice.
How it is enjoyable for the Lord to oversee and permit the material activities of the finishing soul? How it is like a pastime? How does he enjoy that?
Because he's created the whole thing. And because the living entity wants to be God and wants to enjoy separately. So then Krishna has created all this to facilitate that for the living entity. But the purpose of the material world is to reform the living entity, to bring him back to the spiritual world. That's the purpose of it. So because of that purpose, then that's more interesting to Krishna. Because him expanding and entering into the material energy is not a great thing. That's why he says, what's the point of all these details? Only by a small spark of my splendor is then this whole place has been expanded and maintained. So it's nothing much for him. What's more pleasurable to him is that it's the opportunity or the situation in which the Lord can interface with his devotees. And then others can get attracted by that and be uplifted. Does that make sense? Because whatever Krishna does, then is his pastime. But it's not that some pastimes are more pleasurable than others. That's natural.
So it does, and somehow he gets pleasure from that.
Because he's making the arrangements for the living entities. It's not creating the material world is what's so fun. That's easy enough to do. Right? It's just like, let's say you're cooking something for somebody. You know, you like cooking. I mean, you can cook, so therefore the cooking was nice. But the real thing is that it's been cooked for someone else. That's the pleasure out of it, not the cooking itself. There's something in the cooking. But the real pleasure is in having done it for another person. Does that make sense? So creating the material world, maintaining the material world, destroying, that's not a big deal. You know, what's nice about it is he's created a place in which he can interface with the devotees. Does that make sense? Yes, no?
Yeah, but that particular function of the Paramatma to Hanumanta and the Buddhashta, you know, that in relation to the conditioned soul, that Krishna said, as I do that, as a Paramatma, I oversee and accumulate. So that particular activity, how is that, like, did Krishna get any fun out of that?
No, it's just like this. How much fun you get out of turning slightly sideways and reaching your hand into the salt and picking up enough to put into the subject and dropping it in the subject. Right? It's part of the cooking. But it's not that's what the pleasure is. Like if we say, okay, I like cooking, then what is it you like about the cooking? Was it putting the pot on the fire? Or was it turning on the stove? Or maybe it was clicking the little thing that made the fire go on? Or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you like cooking, but what is it you like? It's actually you like cooking for someone. You know, yeah, or yourself, or somebody. Somebody, you know, we're all somebody also. So, you know what I'm saying?
Okay. So it's a part of the season.
Yeah, it's just one of the things that you do. You know, it's just like, let's say, you like being with your friend. Oh, okay, so you're being with the friend. So what is it you like? You know, turning your head and, you know, seeing them, or, you know, when you blink your eyes, or, you know, the tongue vibrating in your mouth when you talk, or, you know, what is it that you like about it? You know what I'm saying? So it's not so much the things. Those just happen. Those are just part of it. That's the situation in which the relationship can be appreciated. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Can Lord Shiva give liberation? No.
I mean, I think there is some one piece,
because before this
one
special
qualities,
and gods are not talking to be called demigods, and Shiva is not
a demigod.
No, yes, he's a demigod. He's separate from
himself.
But he's counted amongst the demigods.
He's not a part of
this category. But that doesn't mean that he's not a demigod.
The demigod is an expression.
No, that's a different point. She is not in the spiritual world. She is not in Vaikuntha. She is connected with the material world only. Right? If his wife is a material energy, then he'll be in Vaikuntha and leave her here or something. Right? Yeah, so that's...
I heard somewhere that he gives impersonal liberation.
Huh?
I heard that he can give impersonal liberation.
Here are the five. Lord is situated in his original position, omniscient, fresh and youthful, concentrated form of eternity, knowledge and bliss, possessor of mystic perfection. Liberation is not mentioned.
Okay. Then what are present, not present in demigods like Lord Shiva or other living entities? These are, and only in Narayan, inconceivable supreme power, generating innumerable universes from the body, being the original source of all incarnations, bestowing salvation upon enemies killed, and the ability to attract exalted persons who are satisfied in themselves. Well, it means to give liberation means you have to be able to bind them. Shiva doesn't bind them, they're already bound. Krishna glances. Right? Krishna glances, not Shiva. Shiva goes with the glance. Means the glance is Shiva. But the glances come from Krishna. So Shiva carries the living entities into the material world. So by giving them devotional service, in that way, then they qualify themselves to be liberated by the Supreme Lord. You know, as a devotee, then he can do that. Does that make sense? Okay.
Just removing the false ego, which Shiva can do, is that some kind of like...
Means we pray to him to remove the false ego, but we worship Lord Shiva in the form of Advaitacharya. You know, for us, that's the problem.
For the impersonalists who worship him.
So, yeah, they worship him, the impersonalists.
So what we can,
to
what
get free from the material energy. They don't know about false ego. It means that for them, false ego means thinking, you know, I'm the grossest subtle body. But what they don't know is that there's a subtler form of false ego, is that I'm the controller and the enjoyer. That they don't know. Therefore, they get rid of the gross body, they get rid of the subtle body, but they don't get rid of the false identity as being the Supreme Lord and the enjoyer. That they don't.
So for the bodies, you can remove that?
Yeah, because the devotees are aware that they are servant of Krishna. The solution to I'm the controller and enjoyer is I am Krishna's servant. So the impersonalists don't know that. Therefore, how Shiva will give that to them. Does that make sense? You can't separate them. It's just like something is outside. Means, no, not like specific, they're energies of the Lord. You know, there's your Vihladivya Samdit Sandhi, but he's the origin. See, the problem comes is this. We're in the material world, which is dead matter. And so therefore, what's inside our head is intelligence made out of dead matter and a mind made out of dead matter. Right? Now you have, but the soul and the spiritual world is transcendental, the spiritual. Okay? So as it is, the material mind and intelligence can't understand the spiritual world because it's different. Dead matter cannot understand spirit, right? Now, so that's already a problem. Now we complicate that problem, is that Krishna is the source of the spiritual world, right? So that means, and the material world, that means he's something else. He's something completely different. Therefore, what's the chance of you understanding
what Krishna is with, you know, a dead matter brain and dead matter mind. You understand? But the point is how can you understand? Can a dwarf touch the moon? Yeah, I just want to know what it felt like. See, you're confident that with your mind and intelligence, you can understand all things that you want to understand. But it doesn't work like that. Can you, with your intelligence, can you understand the experience of affection? No. So that's just a mundane quality of the mind. And it can't be understood by the intelligence, let alone the spirit.
I mean that matter of life, such questions are not even relevant regarding the Krishna's form.
No. It means it's made out of eternality, made out of knowledge, and made out of happiness. But happiness is not happiness around here. Happiness is you know, transcendent bliss. So eternality as it is, can you... Knowledge, can you grab it? Happiness, can you grab it? So then how you understand? The mind understands, the intelligence understands this stuff. Because the intelligence is connected to the senses. So senses only from the perceived dead matter. So that it's sense, the intelligence can be subtle enough to be able to sense the subtle body, you know, and aspects of that, but it's still doing that through the senses, which themselves are dead men. The point is it's eternality, knowledge, and bliss. So that is manifest as his form, and then the Brahman is his effulgence. So that's the eternality principle. You know, he knows everything is everywhere, it's the Paramatma. That's his knowledge principle.
Is there something called spiritual intelligence? Obviously we can understand spirit.
Yes, spiritual intelligence is there because the whole thing is the mind can be spiritual or material depending on its association. So therefore, the spiritual intelligence, but that comes by serving the... having complete faith in Guru and Krishna. There's that verse. Yesterday, Devi Parava here. Yeah. Prakashante Mahatma. It means that will be revealed. Prakash is that it's, you know, revealed. It's. So if one has that, then one will know all these things. So then one's working in something different. Realization is different from intelligence. Does that make sense?
With our spiritual intelligence, we can go as far as surrender. Not that we really comprehend Achinti.
No, Achinti you can't comprehend anyway. See, there's no need to comprehend. It means what is necessary, you know that. That's all. You know what I'm saying? You know? It's just like to enjoy lunch, you need to know all the particular, you know, how you say it? The breakdown, the mineral breakdown of the grain of rice you're eating. You know, exactly what are the proportions of whichever elements it's made out of. You know, how much calcium is there, how many milligrams, what's the proportion, what's the quality of that.
Exactly.
you know,
hydrogen.
Yeah, some hydrogen, some oxygen, like that, you know, is there, is a boiler in that, and then there must be some other things there to hold it together. Yeah, it takes away the enjoyment. Therefore, intelligence is only useful to understand, to discriminate between one thing and another, that's all. So to discriminate what is matter and what is spirit, and that spirit is better than matter. Right? To get the mind to accept, I want spirit and not matter. And the intelligence to show what's the difference. And then that's it. But the taste is going to be based on the interaction with spirit, not in analyzing spirit. That's the point. So knowledge has its limit. It's good up to liberation. After liberation, it doesn't have any purpose. So therefore, since it only goes up to there, it can't understand anything beyond it anyway. Understand? Like you want to get into a building, let's say. Okay? And so we use our car to drive over to that building. Right? Can you take the car into the building? So therefore the car is only useful to get to the building, but it is not useful in the building. Right? Take your car into the bathroom, you know, like that. A little hard to back around. Drive up next to the sink, you know, wash your hands and all that. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't have... So intelligence is good for getting up to the spiritual realm, but it has no function in the spiritual realm because it's not of the spiritual realm. Does that make sense? No. Mundane intelligence isn't what's important. Spiritual intelligence is what's important. Because mundane intelligence, you may become proud of. So because of that, then you'll get distracted. Right? Means you want the mind to accept the point. Right? Intelligence is used to discriminate, but if the mind has accepted some other point, it doesn't matter how intelligent you are, it won't take it. Right? Or if you think that by intelligence you'll understand everything, intelligence can only discriminate between one thing and another. You can't, it's not. And it may say that according to this thing, if you make this as a standard, this is better. If you make this as a standard, then this is better. So they discriminate. They figure out the difference and put things together. But the mind has to say what it's accepting as a standard. Like that. So therefore, if one's more intelligent, as long as one is more surrendered, then it may be useful. But if one is less surrendered, more intelligent, then that's dangerous.
Intelligence is supposed to be higher than
brain. Yeah, but if it's, but it only does the work that the mind gives it. The mind wants something, so it uses intelligence. The mind is the pivot. It may be, you know, that the thing that you're trying to get at is the mind, not the intelligence. The mind accepts Krishna, then things go well. The mind doesn't accept Krishna, then what's the use? We can present so much intellectual things, it's not accepted. Does that make sense? So material intelligence is not a qualification for going back to God. Actually, probably gives you an example. The gopis were big scholars and intellectuals. They just liked Krishna. So that's what you're trying to get to, is just liking Krishna.
God, the meaning of spiritual, the God going to believing what you are talking about, is that the higher thing is spiritual?
Not necessarily. We're referring to knowledge there. If knowledge is what can take you to liberation, but it has no function beyond.
Knowledge, no, I do mean what? Cognition. Cognition of everything is ultimate right. Reality.
And that's going then beyond. Knowledge just saying that you see this and using logic. Here is we're talking about logic, because he's talking logic. I mean, this is not logical to him, because in his experience, you know, he hasn't met anything bigger than, you know, a mountain or the Twin Towers or something like that. So therefore, if you want to go beyond that to something unlimited, then the intelligence can't make that jump. That's the difficulty. So, but actually being aware, conscious, that's what we're trying to get to. First you're getting conscious of the material energy. It means consciousness starts with being conscious of the material energy. Then you see that material energy in connection to Krishna. So then that spiritualizes that consciousness. Then we come to the platform of being conscious actually of the spirit. That. And then matter for us is not an important thing. We engage it, but it's not. And so when it comes to liberated platform, once one is liberated, one doesn't require it anymore.
So chit is more than just intelligence. Chit is conscious of eternality.
Yeah.
The
it's
brain,
least,
and everything is one.
Yeah. It's
you cannot be separated.
You can't separate them. See, for our understanding, the philosophy separates them, but for Krishna, he doesn't separate them. You know, it's just like you go to some biology class. Okay, so in biology class, they go, okay, this is your fingernail. This is your finger. This is the tip of your finger. This is your hand. This is the palm of your hand. This is the back of your hand, right? This is your elbow, this is your nose. But when you are going around and walking around in that, then you're thinking, yes, I just wiped my nose, now I got my fingertips, you know, on the end of the ground with the main weight on my thumb, you know, like that, and I'm leaning my head, you know, to the left, and now I'm moving it up the center, but, you know, slightly now more to the right. That's what you're doing? So that's the whole point. God doesn't make, he doesn't worry about all that. It's his. But for the living entity to distinguish that I'm not this body, and I'm not God, I'm not the enjoyer, someone else is in charge around here, you know, to differentiate between matter and spirit, then intelligence is used. Therefore, we break it up into these three. Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. But for Krishna, then he doesn't distinguish them. He doesn't distinguish them. There's no need. You have to distinguish your arm to pick something up. Oh, okay, here's my arm. Okay, I'm going to touch this. No, you just touch it. Your desire and the movement of the arm is the same. Right? So Krishna's desire, Krishna's attainment of that desire, and his process to get that desire are one. It's whatever he wants happens. Does that make sense? Oh, okay. Let your process go on.
Your material intelligence, a lot of it, but your power of it, it's obstacle.
If you say again?
The overgrowth of material intelligence, but if you're part of it, is an obstacle. But the pride is ignorance.
Pride is ignorance.
Oh, but you're proud of,
intelligence is passion.
Yeah, so in fact, intelligence seems to be. So it means that intelligence, material intelligence doesn't stand for knowledge. It's not the same as knowledge.
Maybe knowledge, but the point is how do you, what is that, what do you call, I mean, what is the knowledge? What is it used for? You know, is this a computer, or is this a bunch of plastic, or is this some, you know, demoniac thing that's destroying the environment, or is this, you know, the greatest tool, you know, mankind ever designed for, you know, creating interaction and business, and what is it? You know what I'm saying? Which of those is truth? So all that is, you know, various aspects of knowledge, but real knowledge is what's given by God. Because then God gives a standard, then you judge what this thing is. Does that make sense?
Purpose.
Yeah, it means knowledge has to have some purpose. Because knowledge will be connected with an activity. Right? Otherwise it's useless. That's why academics, generally speaking, are useless, though, because of their inflated pride, they think themselves very important. But they're only important is basically creating more academics. That's all. Like yogurt creates more yogurt, so academics create academics. But academics don't do anything other than give classes that create more academics. There's very few academics that actually do anything useful. Because most academics simply discuss and describe stuff that another academic already worked out. Maybe they put it together this way or that. Very few create something that somebody who actually does something in the world uses. You know what I'm saying? Somebody came up with some theory or that, and then some businessman or some government uses it to advantage. But then, you know, it'll be another 50 years, 100 years before someone comes along with something really useful again. You understand? But they're very proud that they're very important in this world.
You're giving the highest respect.
Yeah. But it's natural because knowledge is respected.
But they don't get the highest salary.
No. Okay. Guru, one gets Krishna. By the grace of Krishna, one gets Guru. When you want to know Krishna, he gives Guru. And then from Guru, you know Krishna. Right? Means you want to know Krishna, you have to approach Radharani. If you approach her, then there's the Parampara. So then you have the Guru. Right? So by his grace, then you can know, and then you know. Then you can approach, and then Radharani, through Radharani approach Krishna, by Krishna. Then by Krishna's grace, then you can know the Radharani. Does that make any sense? Okay. And also for us, then that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because he is Radha and Krishna. So then you can understand both of them by that. So, it's amazing, you can approach both of them simultaneously. Right? So they're both together as one, so you can go approach them. And at the same time as then you can know them separately. That makes sense.
I think that is mind and intelligence. If mind is driving intelligence,
That's spiritual energy. That's Krishna.
And why is it not given to everybody? Why is it only for people?
Because they don't want it.
And how they, how some non-devotees get it?
By the grace of the Lord. Because devotees go out to give it to them, and by somehow or another, then they take a little bit of it. Yeah, it's only the mercy of the devotees.
That's the way we get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He also got it.
Yeah. It's by the grace of the devotees only then you learn about this.
Are you neglecting material knowledge?
Am I neglecting?
Yeah, because the way you're saying is like knowledge is, you know, doing.
So, okay, so Bill Gates is making $30 million dollars a day because of a PhD in Central African anthropomorphic, you know, studies, right? Isn't it? No, because he knows business. The guy doesn't even have a high school diploma. Okay? You understand? So the whole point is what I'm saying is, when you say material knowledge, what knowledge? What is material knowledge? He's got knowledge that none of those guys on any campus in the world has. Right? Because he can put the money in his pocket. Prabhupada tells a story. One man asked a boy, he said, "Are you intelligent?" And he checked in his pockets to see if there was any money. Because if he had money, he was intelligent. But if you have intelligence and you can't apply it, is that actually called intelligence? Can you really call it intelligence? How many PhDs in the world can actually apply their knowledge in something other than on a blackboard? And do something with it in their life. What value does it have? The expert in, you know, Egyptian, you know, culture, but does he live any of it? Any of the Egyptian values are his? Religion, dress, philosophy? No, he just knows what the Egyptians did. So what?
Speculates about it.
Yeah, that also speculates about it. But, you know, you find one little bone about this big, and then they turn that into a species of human being. You know, they find a little cheekbone out here, and then they turn that into, you know. You know what I'm saying? Well, what do they do with it? What has it done? You know what I'm saying?
But material knowledge is, I mean, they are giving some, what to say, good things. You know.
Good things? Like what? Maybe. I mean, we're open here. We're broad-minded here, so you can speak.
For example, in like the engineering side or computer, I mean, engineering side, if creating more computers like this, you know.
Engineering, but so what is the benefit of engineering?
Like this in front of you, this laptop, and we're using it.
It's like, we're using it only because, you know, other things are more of a problem. Like that, but at what expense?
There's some benefits on
it. Benefits, yeah. Right? It means this is made out of plastic. Where did plastic come from?
I mean, I don't talk about the plastic. I'm talking about the source coming up from here. I mean, you can just, you know, interact with
it. Well, you can't separate it.
Yeah.
Somebody's brain made this. Yeah. So, to make this, what is happening? You have to drill the earth. You have to move it around, so you're polluting the atmosphere. You have a nice ozone hole because of this stuff. Right? You can't go out in the sun. There's parts of the world you can't go outside. You can't go out of their door because of this. And who's using this? How many people in Africa, South America, Central America, East Bloc,
Central Asia, China. You understand? So what I'm saying is, it's beneficial, but for who?
For everyone of us.
Everyone. 6 billion people on this planet that are benefiting from this.
Because they're not fortunate to have this, you know, so we are fortunate to have this, so we are getting the benefit from it.
We are getting the benefit from it, but at what expense?
Manas, you were making a...
No, this is...
Benefit is the internet and all the...
Internet, okay, so you get... It means etiquette in the world can get as much unlimited pornography as they can get their little fingers on. It's pretty good, isn't it? I mean, knowledge is important, right? So that at 8 years old, you can have yourself, you know, so nice some pictures. Good, right? The point is, what is the importance of this? If people are God conscious, and you wouldn't need these. Books are quite nice.
Why are you using it? Why are you still using it?
What has that got to do with anything? If I use it for Krishna, what's the problem? But everybody else on this planet's using it? No, everybody else is using it? I'm only using it because it's there.
So if it properly utilized...
Properly utilized? Yeah. Who is the properly utilizing it? Why will they properly utilize it?
We human beings are properly utilizing it.
We human beings. What's this we business? You count the number of human beings on this planet that use it for Krishna. How many are there?
There's certain numbers of...
Certain numbers, yeah, and then? And what is all the others using it for? Point is we don't need this. A book is quite nice. Right? God created books. Man created this. Why is this here? For the benefit of mankind? Is that why this is here? You really think that people sat around and thought how I could benefit people and make this computer as a welfare activity? Is that what you're thinking? You have this because it was made for the government for defense. IBM was a defense company. It's called Interballistic Missile. It's not called laptop computer. And so therefore... The things in computers, the government figures is so backwards that they don't require it anymore, like a Pentium 4 chip. They put out on the market and make some money from all the other idiots. And who's putting it out on the market? Bill Gates. Is he doing it as a welfare activity? He's doing it to make money. And then we're stupid enough to get involved in it and think that this somebody is doing some great welfare work. The people on this world, they couldn't care less about you. They like your money. They like to get your money. But don't be under illusion that they're out there working to help you. They're out there to help themselves. Right? That's just the way the world is. So, therefore, if the devotee uses it for Krishna's sake, to purify it, it's there. If it wasn't there, we wouldn't use it. We don't need this. If it wasn't here, we'd use a book. That's all. It's just there. We're using it. You know, go to Calcutta, so you use the road. Right? We could walk, but then we get less done for Krishna. But if the road wasn't there, we would walk. We're not dependent upon this, but your modern culture is, your modern businesses, your modern academics are. You understand? They're dependent upon it, we're not. We're using it. But we're using it to please Krishna. If it's not there, we couldn't care less. Because how many people out there, and how many people it took to do this? How many academics out there did this?
Yeah,
Who got this done? The academics got it done? No. A government man got it done. A businessman got it done. Right? They're just sitting around thinking, they're not doing much. Unless they think about God, what's the use of what they think about? You know, you sit and really think about it. You think about what's going on. Maybe scary. May completely destroy your whole foundation of what your life is. Of what you think is a value in your future and your safety and your prosperity. But there's nothing to gain here in this world. The material world has nothing to offer. Therefore, then, if we can engage it in Krishna's service, fine. But it's not for us. I'm using his computer, not my computer. And it's not his either, it belongs to the school. That's here I use it. If you gave me a book, I'd use the book. I prefer books. I think these are very annoying. You know, you want to flip pages, you can't do that here. You can see half a page at a time, move it up, move it down one line at a time. It's pretty slow. Doesn't it all come up to the standard of the book? Okay?
He said in Kali Yuga, one of the symptoms that we lost the memory. They're trying to give us more memory.
Yeah, more money. They charge you for that.
There's so much there in the mind of it, trying to clean it up. And a couple of them we put more inside.
More, yeah. But it means what you use it for, and that's another thing.
Like Einstein, when somebody asked him what his phone number was, he says, oh, just wait a minute, I'll tell you. And he went over to his phone book, you know, opened up, looked in it, said, okay, my number is this. And the other person was amazed. He says, you know, Einstein, smartest guy, and you don't know your own phone number? He says, why should I fill my head up with phone numbers? They have more important things to think about. You know, I can write it down. I'm not going to spend any space in my brain for that phone number.
Don't get stuck in
there. Yeah. So, Smith, what's in those people's brains? What have they gained from it? It's there. What have people gained from it? It's the quality of life gone up. Right? In India here, right? Marriages are improving. The youth is, you know, better. You know, more people are more conscious of their environment and health. They're going back to, you know, following more the culture and the Vedas and all that. Isn't that what's going on in India? Yes? No?
Yes, from Hollywood.
Yeah. Go to Bombay. The girls all look like something out of the 60s when I was a kid. You know? You have to eat meat. You have to drink. You have to have illicit sex. Because you have to, otherwise you're not Western. Westerners don't always do it. But Indians think if they don't do it, they're not Western. That's the funny thing. Yeah. Indians are more Western than Westerners. Like that. Like that. Whole communities, Marwaris, Gujaratis, this generation, finished. They're not vegetarian anymore. They've been vegetarian for, you know, thousands and millions of years. One generation, gone. So what's the improvement? What's the television done for us? What's the computer done for us?
So if the material knowledge properly used...
That's all. I'm talking about if. I'm talking about what's going on. I'm talking about the man sitting in Oxford, the man sitting in Harvard, you know, the ladies sitting down in Bangalore. You know, there's more hits on pornographic sites in the world in Bangalore by women.
So then there's no way of material knowledge can be in some
But gain, what is the good that it's gaining? It's only good as if it can be engaged in Krishna service. But they don't need to do this to engage it in Krishna service. It's there, we'll use it in Krishna service. But we can do without it. Since it's there, we can use it, but its only benefit is if it's engaged in Krishna service. So why be so complicated? Why not be more simple? This is called knowledge, or the individual's intelligence is knowledge. Right? The individual's intelligence is going down, though they have more gizmos and gadgets that are, you know, that they can use. But the individual's brain power is less than what it used to be. You just go to the teachers and say, are the kids becoming more intelligent, higher grades? And they'll tell you, no. The character is going down, the concentration is going down, everything's going down. You ever look at old movies? Like from the 50s or 40s? Right? You ever seen? Okay. It doesn't change. They get bored. So what is that called? Is that good? So has the modern gizmos, have they improved the quality of life? That's what they say they're doing. Of course, they've improved the guy who sold his life, but the guy who has it improved his? The guy who owns the television company, his life definitely is improved. He's got his yacht in the Bahamas, and he's got, you know, 3 or 4 houses around the world. Right? But the people who watch it, are they? The guy who owns the television company is called rich. The guys who watch the television are called couch potatoes.
You want to be rich.
Couch potato.
Yeah, couch potato. You know couch?
Yeah, couch is the sofa.
Yeah, that big, like, big, long, big, wide chair. And they... Potato is a potato. They just sit there. You know, that's it.
You see the bahamas on the television.
Yeah. I mean, they get a lot of exercise, you know, they move the thumb. Saying, if you look at it, what is the only use of anything? I'm just talking about this. Why this? Anything else. Even you have anything else. You have so much nature or natural things. They're not used in God's service, then what's the use of them? Huh? Is there any use? You have a beautiful girl. Okay, now did modern science create that beautiful girl? They did on the magazine cover, but that girl doesn't exist. There aren't any girls like that. Right? But the girl that you find on the street that looks beautiful, no. Any what knowledge created that? Right? All the guys that got the gizmos, the gadgets, the this, the that, what are they running after? Beautiful girls. So their intelligence created those girls? Right? Everybody needs to eat. Did their intelligence create the food? Everyone needs to sleep. What intelligence created that? Right? People are having sex and making more people. What scientist dreamed up sex? I'm sure if whoever did got a Nobel Prize. Right? Affection between people, that love between family members. What intelligence created that? You understand? So the whole thing is that's what people are looking for. These are simply means to an end. They want a happy family, that they have some, you know, people to care for them, and they feel some security and some safety in that family situation. That's what it is. This gizmo is not the thing. What do you think? Yes, no? Not sure. So you feel if you get a nice, you know, Pentium 4 computer with 256 RAM, yeah. Uno, 20 gigabyte hard drive, your life has made it.
right? All the emotional interaction and everything that you've ever wanted, all your children, right? We can give you all the virtual children you want, virtual security, you know. Is that it? This perfects your life.
In every village you should have.
Yeah, of course. Every village should have. I'm sure Bill Gates would go for that.
Public cows.
Yeah, virtual cows and their virtual milk. But, you understand the point?
The point is the computer still giving some advantage to the devotees, like Hare Krishna devotees,
yes,
and all those things. Yeah. So how we can neglect this?
What do you mean to neglect it? I can take it right now and throw it over the fence. You want to watch me do it? You know, don't give me that kind of crap. You need to neglect this. Just because you can't neglect it doesn't mean others can't. Okay. The point is what is it? Don't give me that kind of stuff. You're so special or something? Point is I'm giving the class. You don't understand what I'm saying. Maybe you're the one that's a problem. You go to a university and you don't understand the teacher. You flunk. You're the one that gets bad grades. You're the one that doesn't get the job. You're the one that loses out, not the teacher. That's reality. That's the real world. So I understand your point. I'm using it in Krishna's service. You're not understanding my point. That's the point. You're saying it's beneficial. I'm using it. I already understood your point. But you haven't understood my point. That you think there's some value in modern culture, modern society, modern intelligence. It's there, we're using it for Krishna. But it has, except for the using it for Krishna, it has zero value. Because it can't give anything itself. The Vedic culture given by God, all the things people are looking for in this modern world that are not getting it, you can have. Okay? You go back a generation or two, and you see the families stay together. Kids are very nice, they're respectful of their parents. Parents are taking care of the kids. Parents grow old, they stay with the children. Very nice relationships. That's because they're following the Vedic culture. Nowadays, the families are trying to follow the modern. They don't have any of that. So whatever is of real value to the human being is lost in the modern culture. And if you're going to tell me a computer is more valuable than a relationship, a good relationship between a husband and wife, or parent and child, then maybe you've missed the point. Maybe you've missed the point. You're young now. You can see you when you're 40 years old and then see what you think. 40 years old, sitting around alone. Even though you got, you know, the latest, you know, Pentium 6 computer. Point is that people are looking for relationships with each other. That's what they're trying to do. You're going to the bookshops. What are the books about? People are lost. They can't figure out how to interact. They don't know. They have no idea. They know how to push the buttons on the computer. So, therefore, the modern science and all that is useless. You connect it to Krishna. Then we're connecting it to Krishna, but to do what? To re-establish the old. And when the old is established, it's like taking a thorn out with a thorn. You get a thorn in your leg, the thorn's useless, but you use another thorn to take it out. When the other thorn's out, you throw both of them away. You don't keep the thorn going. It's such a nice thorn. See, good thorn. Right? So we're using this thorn to pull out all the other thorns. You understand that point. Your point, I've understood. I'm using the computer. But my point, you haven't understood. So you think that there's something useful here for you as a living entity. Think about it. What do you value in life? You want relationships with people? You want interactions? Some affection? Somebody who cares for you? Or, you know, a nice computer? You had the two, you could have one or the other, which would you take? Would you take? Not sure. Too hypothetical. Understand it all. You're using this to try to find people going, what do? They go on a chat conference, right? People before used to just sit down and talk with each other. People used to have real friends. The person you're chatting to here, a really wonderful, nice, you know, handsome guy that, you know, is there and so nice and really knows how to deal, you might find out as some, you know, some 40-year-old lesbian dyke down at the, you know, in Amsterdam, you know, that works at a pub. It's not uncommon.
But with help of this internet and this computer, I'm able to contact my grandma if I have any problems.
Yeah, so
by the way, it just helped me. So
yeah, okay,
I feel
so
that this thing is very important to me because I'm so far away from him.
Okay.
So it's like a tool for me to to
say
to put a better relationship between me and my grandma.
Okay.
So I really appreciate this.
Okay. So that's cool. That's nice. That's not a problem. But the problem is that you have faith that the modern civilization has something to offer you. That's the weakness. Because you haven't noticed any of the points that I've made.
A hundred years ago only, any brahmachari who's far away from his guru would have great feelings of separation.
Yeah.
That's amazing. It was not there.
Yeah, means it's good. We're not saying that that's a problem. We've already acknowledged that that's a good thing. Right? We've already acknowledged that. But the point is that the modern civilization has nothing to offer a living entity in value for the soul. You may be using it that way, but that's your application. You're one person. The rest of the world is going to hell with it. And the people who created it didn't create it so you could talk to your Guru Maharaj. They created it so you could also go to hell. That's why they created it. They didn't create it for you to talk to your Guru Maharaj. Because you're clever, you're using it for that. But they didn't create it for that. They created it to send you to hell. and in the process for them to get your money. Right? Every time you log on, they take money out of your pocket. Right? And every time you need to go get fix it, they take money out of your pocket. And whether you talk to your Guru Maharaj or not, they couldn't care less as long as you're getting money out of your pocket. So that's my point. You're clever, you're using it for your Guru Maharaj. But that's not why they created it. Don't be under any illusion. IBM, the CEO at IBM never thought for a moment that, hey, this would be great for contacting, you know, between disciple and spiritual master. Why don't we try to develop this? Right? No, they created it because they wanted to drop a bomb on somebody's head. Right? You understand? That's what they want. Material world is bad. And the sooner you understand that, the happier you'll be. And the longer it takes you to understand it, the more you'll find difficulty in this world. That's all. It's a simple thing. That makes sense, or not really? Oh well, let's stop raining, so now we can. Let's stop it. This is nothing about you or anything. It's about material civilization. You're young, and you have no experience. And when you do have some experience, you know, material world's not a nice place. They tell you it's a nice place, but it's not. They're from where? Which place? Which city?
Malaysia.
Malaysia. Okay. So then, and if you look around, it's not really a great place. All kinds of nice wars and rape and, you know, and all different things, cheating in the government. It's just normal stuff that goes on. It's not that it's an aberration that came up today. That's been going on and will keep going on. Therefore, the devotee is trying to get out of this material world. Right? Because it's not a nice place. Therefore, it's such a bad place. Why is it such a bad place? Because everybody's so God-conscious. No, because they're not God-conscious. So therefore, if we use the thorn, means they're the thorn, to take out the thorn, then that's intelligent. So if you use the computer to contact your Guru Maharaj to become God-conscious, and then go back to Godhead, that's intelligent. But if you think staying here in the material world is a great thing to do, then it's not so intelligent. So intelligence is what it can get for you. The material energy doesn't get us anything. Does that make any sense? Not really. That means, see, intelligence is the ability to discriminate between two different things. So the most important aspect of intelligence is to tell the difference between matter and spirit. And when you can do that, that's intelligence. Okay. That's real intelligence. Because all the other intelligence, even though so intelligent, they die. What have they done about dying? Have they corrected death, birth, old age, disease? Has any of that been corrected? They got rid of polio, and they got rid of AIDS. They get rid of one, a new one comes up. Better than the last, right? More high tech. Okay. So that's the difficulty. They haven't solved this. They talk about it, never solved it. Birth, death, old age, and disease has not been solved to this day. Even they solve the disease, still you die. So even the most intelligent person dies, and then what's the benefit? He's gone. What did it do for him? Did it save him from death? No. Anyone who follows him, has it saved him from death? No. You use a computer, does it save you from death? Only if you use it for Krishna. So does that mean only you can only approach Krishna through the computer? No, you can approach Krishna without the computer. But you can also use the computer. Therefore, Krishna is independent. Your approaching Krishna is independent from the computer. So therefore, we can understand the only thing of value in this world is Krishna. And approaching Krishna, that's what's of value. Right? Not the computer. The computer is not what's of value. It's approaching your Guru Maharaj is of value. Now, if you could approach your Guru Maharaj without the computer, okay, let's say he comes to Malaysia, and he's sitting there in front of you, then you're going to get out your computer, and then you're going to type some things like that and send on a chat conference. No, you're going to talk directly. Right? And so, which would you rather do? Talk to him directly or talk to him on the computer?
In case of emergency, help me a lot, but whenever it's not in Malaysia, like...
No, but when he's there personally...
Yeah, of course I'll talk to him.
Okay, so that means you're using the computer because he's not there personally. So the real thing is talking to your Guru Maharaj. And if you can use the computer or use a letter or use a phone, you know, whatever the medium is, that doesn't matter. Right? So what is the value? The medium or what you're doing with the medium? Right? Which of the two? Is the phone important? Or is the conversation you're having on the phone important?
Conversation.
Yeah. Okay. So that is the point. You have to be able to discriminate between what is something that's used as an instrument and what is what you're trying to actually do. What's the activity you're actually doing? And then what's the goal of that activity? That's real. This is intelligence. See, it's a kind of intelligence that maybe you haven't been thinking about. That's beyond this. This is not so intelligent. This is gross matter. It only requires the senses. Real intelligence is to be able to tell matter from spirit. What is devotional service? What's material activity? You know, what is the activity? What is the elements used in the activity? What's the goal of the activity? And you can distinguish these, then you can tell the difference. So the real thing is the computer is not what's important. Talking to your Guru Maharaj is important. And you may use it, you know, you want to talk to your Guru Maharaj, you may also use a car because you have to get over to where he is. You're going to use your mouth, that's also material. You're going to use your ears to hear. You're going to use your eyes to see. Right? Isn't it? Those things are there. But the real thing you want to do is be able to see and talk to your Guru Maharaj. Interact. So interaction with your Guru is what's important. Talking is one of the ways. Would you like him just to talk to you and never smile? Just a deadpan face, monotone voice. Something like, you know, computer voice. Hello, how are you today? Right? It's the interaction, the personal interaction. Yes? No? No. You're a robot yourself, so you don't care for these things. Right? It's important or not? Yeah, okay. So therefore, that's what you're trying to get to. So real intelligence is to get to that. You use this, you use something else, what does it matter? This happens to be here, we use it. It works, we use it. It's not here, we don't use it. You know what I'm saying? What if your Guru Maharaj wasn't on email? Now, would this computer be valuable then? No. Would you care for modern science in connection with computer? No. Because it gets you your Guru Maharaj. That's what's important. So that's what we've been trying to say all this last hour, is that the computer is secondary. The guy who made it gets some benefit because it's used in Krishna's service. But we are not, the benefit is not this, the computer. The benefit is the connection with Guru and Krishna. So real intelligence is how to connect to Krishna. If you use this, fine. You're using it today. What if tomorrow it doesn't work? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. So trying to show that you have to go beyond that and understand there's something beyond gross matter. Because that's all we're endeavoring for anyway. We only endeavor for things beyond gross matter. That's all we endeavor for. We eat, but what is the thing? It's the happiness we get from it. We eat, we say it's a sensation, but what is that sensation? It gives us happiness. So is happiness gross matter? No, it's subtle. So even in the material world, people are only looking for the subtle. So we're trying to point out is the subtle, there's beyond that, there's the soul. Right? You talk to Guru Maharaj because you like the sound of his voice, it's, you know, it has a certain ring to it, or like that. No, it's because it creates a spiritual interaction between the soul and the spiritual master. That's what's important. That's why that's nice. That's why you need it. It's a need of the soul. And if you use these gross things, then that's what we got. So that means it's not the material energy that's making you happy. It's connection with the spiritual master, connection with Krishna that makes you happy. That's why I'm pointing out that the whole material world is useless. It's Krishna that's useful. It's the spiritual masters, the devotees. That is what is the value. And since we're in the material world, we're going to interact them using the material world. If we go back to the spiritual world, we don't need computers this, that. Radharani, she gets on, looks up, you know, made a search engine to find out, you know, which kunj Krishna's in, right? You know what I'm saying? These things aren't important. The interaction is what's important. So since we're here, we're using the material energy, so what? That's all there is. There's nothing else. If we're in the spiritual world, we use the spiritual energy is the medium. Here we're using this as a medium. Right?
So since the material knowledge is available, is it wrong taking it?
If you're using it for Krishna, no.
Yeah.
If you're using it for Krishna, no. But it on its own is useless. Its only use is its connection to Krishna. Right? If it can be connected to Krishna, it's useful. We can't be connected to Krishna. So what's the use? You know what I'm saying? That's the point. So it's not the knowledge that's useful. It's Krishna consciousness that's useful. And it may be the tool. Okay. So its only credit is that it could be connected to Krishna. Does that make sense though? Getting anywhere here? Or? Yes? No? It's late, we should probably go. Sorry if we were a little harsh, but the point is one has to be able to discriminate between the two. So sadhu means cut, so that's our method of teaching. Right? Your mother might speak a little more pleasantly. Srila Prabhupada ki,
Srila
Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada ki